My name is Nancy Camden. I'm an oral historian. Today, September 24th, 2009, I am talking with John and Judy Crane of Green Bay, Wisconsin, to record their oral histories. This oral history is a gift from their sons, Martin, Andrew, and Christopher, on the occasion of their 50th wedding anniversary, which was August 15th of this year. I'm going to be talking with both of them about when they met and their life together at this point. Judy, you lived in the town where you went to college, right?
That's right. I lived at home all the entire time that I was a student at Madison. I started in 1955 and graduated in June of 1959. I loved college. I loved everything about it. It did not seem to me to be a problem to be living at home. I spent most of my time on the campus and loved it all. I loved the classes, and I was involved in quite a few activities. I majored in history and really have valued that my entire life. It was just wonderful.
John, do you remember going off to college?
I started college in 1955, as did Judy, and I graduated in 1959, as did Judy. I was a mechanical engineering student, lived in the dorms for one semester, and then moved into a fraternity house for 3.5 years.
Did you date anyone there before you met Judy?
I think I may have had 2 dates, but we met in February of our freshman year, so there wasn't a lot of opportunity for dates before that.
Where did you meet? Would you remember seeing her for the first time?
Yes. My roommate in the fraternity house was Phil Anderson, and Phil was a high school friend of Judy's. And he said to me, "I know somebody I think you should meet." So he fixed us up on a blind date. And I remember going over to her house. I borrowed somebody's car and went over to her house. A little trouble finding out, but her father was out in front and said, "It's right here." And so I remember walking in the door and seeing her for the first time.
We've always remembered the date because it was the day after John's 19th birthday. He was 19 and I was going to be 19 in 2 weeks.
So, do you remember that day when he came for the date?
Oh, I do. I do remember. And we don't remember. I think we went to a movie, but that's probably all I remember. But I do remember him coming to the house. And we had another date 2 weeks after that, I think. And neither of us ever dated anyone else after that.
Do you think you knew right away that this was going to be more than just a couple of dates, or did it take a while?
No, I think we knew right away.
We were both smitten.
Our backgrounds were so similar. You know, our families, we just natural to be together.
What kind of things did you do for dates?
Well, we did the 50s kinds of things. We went to movies. We went to university events, sometimes athletic events. We studied together frequently. And then John got into the habit of coming to our house, to my house for dinner every Sunday. And my brothers still claim that's how I got him.
That was your mother's good cooking.
It was indeed.
What were the other activities that you were involved with at the time on campus? Were you involved with the Navy program?
Well, that took a lot of time, and engineering school was a lot of credits, so I didn't have much extra time. But we did enjoy going to things at the university, and I remember in particular that we would go to the boxing matches, which eventually the university dropped boxing, but that was something that we did.
John also spent a good deal of time at the fraternity because he worked at the fraternity, and so your job as the steward really took a lot of time. I was very involved at the union. At the Memorial Union, there were many activities and an organizational structure that I enjoyed very much at the union, and I was involved in some other campus activities as well as things that came out of the things I was studying. So it was a very rich time.
When you talk about things we went to at the university, one very deep regret I have is that Pete Seeger came to Madison to sing, and we were ordered by the Navy not to attend his concert because he was on the list of the House Un-American Activities.
You've always regretted that you didn't go. But we did go to see Harry Belafonte, and we had never heard of him when we went to hear him. That's lasted for us our entire lives. We saw him again a few years ago. He came, did a concert in Green Bay.
Did anyone there know that you had this history of having seen him?
No. In fact, I was a little reluctant to go because I thought it had meant so much when we had first seen and heard him that I was afraid that somehow it was going to be a letdown, but it wasn't. It was good.
How long did it take you to develop yourselves politically and philosophically? Did you know at the time that you were in sync in those areas, or were you still being formed?
Well, I think we knew we were compatible, but in the 50s, in the late 50s, we were kind of called the lost generation because politics wasn't very important to us. I don't think we really got interested in politics other than Judy's education and background with her family, but it wasn't until we were in El Paso, Texas, and it was the time of the presidential campaign with Kennedy and Nixon, and I think that's really when we got interested in in the campaign. We didn't really work in the campaign, but we were very interested.
And, of course, at that time, you weren't allowed to vote until you were 21. So that was the first presidential election in which we voted. We both remember it very well. Our political interest, John has already mentioned that our time in Beloit. John left the Marine Corps in 1962. And we moved to Beloit, where he took a job in a papermaking machine company. And we belonged to a Presbyterian church at that time in Beloit that was very much involved in the social issues of the time. Began with the civil rights and then went into the Vietnam War and then maybe even a little into the feminist movement. And so we got caught up in those issues at that time. And the political dimensions of that were great.
When you were in college, was there a formal engagement?
Well, yes. It wasn't that I got down on my knee and proposed, because I think it just kind of evolved that we knew we were going to get married. But I remember that in 1958, as part of this Navy program, I had to be on active duty each summer for a portion of the time. And so when I came back to Madison, I went down to Milwaukee and bought an engagement ring, and that's when we got engaged. So that's when it became formal. But it was just kind of understood for a long time.
By everybody.
Were you expecting that ring?
I don't know whether I was, well, the night that you gave it to me, we went out to dinner, which in itself was an unheard of thing. We went to a very nice Madison restaurant, which I don't know that either of us ever been there before. And so we'd been a couple for so long by that time that we knew where we were going. And we knew when, because of his military commitment after college, We knew that if we were going to be together, that we'd get married immediately after we graduated, which is what we did. We were 22.
At that dinner, the night we got engaged, we had never ordered a bottle of wine before in our lives, but I ordered a half a bottle of wine and proceeded to accidentally tip it over onto the table.
What was the wedding like?
I would say that it was a typical 50s wedding. It was in the church in which I had been since we moved to Madison, the First Methodist Church in downtown Madison. It was a pretty simple wedding. We had a reception immediately afterwards that was a tea and cookies and kind of a reception. Then we left, as was typical in that time. We understand that after we left, there was a great party that took place at my parents' house. It was very nice and very traditional.
And where did you leave and go to?
Well, we left from Madison and we went to Milwaukee and the place we stayed that night is now a nursing home near where our son Marty lives.
On Blue Mound Road.
On Blue Mound Road. And then we went to Chicago and we saw the Music Man on stage, which we both was very excited. Went to a baseball game, and the week after that was getting to Quantico, Virginia, where you reported in a week later.
In the Marine Corps, all new second lieutenants go to 9 months of basic officer school in Quantico. So that's where we lived for that period of time. And the birth of Marty, our oldest, was expected shortly after the basic school was finished. So I stayed there for a couple more months, which the Marine Corps organized so that we wouldn't be traveling with a young baby. And then we moved to 29 Palms, California, where basically we were stationed there for 2 years. We had a 20-week time in El Paso, Texas, where I went to school, and Judy and Marty came with me. But then I got out of the Marine Corps in August of 1962.
So. The other thing about Quantico that maybe is worth mentioning is the first month we were there, we acquired our first dog, who was an abandoned puppy. And we've had a series of dogs ever since. There's always, except for brief periods there's always been a dog in our house.
Did either of you grow up with pets in the house?
Yes, yes. More so in mine than yours, but you had a dog too when I first knew you. Your parents did.
Right.
So after you left California, where did you go?
I took a job at a company called the Beloit Corporation in Beloit, Wisconsin. And so we moved there immediately or directly from California. And I worked and we lived there for 9 years.
How old was your son when you moved to Beloit?
Our oldest son was two. That's right, because that's part of the story of his illness. But he was just over two, and Andy, our second son, had been born in 29 Palms. Our sons are very close together in age. And he was born 19 months after Marty was born, and then Chris was born in Beloit 25 months after Andy. So there's 3.5 years between the oldest and the youngest.
What was this accident? Where did that happen?
That was in 29 Palms, and he was a little over two. And John had the duty. It was on the base, and I was visiting a friend with my two little boys, And Marty went into their backyard and came in retching and coughing, and he had obviously swallowed wizard charcoal layer fluid. It was a very traumatic experience. He was very ill. There's a tiny little hospital on the base, and two young doctors who followed the book trying to figure out what to do for him, and he had several very serious days in which he went into convulsions and was a very, very sick little boy. It was an awful, awful experience, but we are so grateful that he's fine. He's a physician himself now.
And when you moved to Beloit, you had two children.
Mm-hmm.
And then a third one came along. Were you ready to be parents with the first one? And what was it like to be the parents of three little kids?
Well, we were very young. And were we ready? I suppose not. And yet, it was not uncommon to have children right afterwards. There were lots of people on that base who had babies. Marty was born 9 months after we were married.
They claim that it was in the water there because, as I said, all new second lieutenants just have graduated from college, and many of them just got married because many of them signed agreements that they wouldn't get married until they graduated. There were many babies born right after arrival at...
But did we know what we were doing as far as being parents? Of course not. It was all... But it was also a time when that was not uncommon. There was a difference in intensity, I think, in terms of focusing on... It just seemed natural at that point. And we were young, and it was somewhat of an adjustment for me to be married in the sense that I had really enjoyed my college life, and it was quite different being a young married person on the base. But I made that adjustment, and so we had these three little boys pretty quickly, and we winged it from there.
Did you enjoy your job at that time, John?
When I first went to Beloit, I was in an engineering training program for about 18 months. And after that, I went to work in the engineering department. And it very soon became apparent to me that I wasn't very interested in doing what I had been trained to do. I saw the people from the sales department being involved in lots more interesting things, and so I changed careers and went into sales, selling. So my whole career was in sales, selling technical equipment, so I used my engineering background a great deal, but it was used to convince customers to buy our equipment.
Judy, were there ever times when you were at home with three small children where you didn't feel stimulated intellectually?
That was a challenge, and that's a very important question for me. Let me first say that I had the support of, I was married to the right person, and that made an enormous difference. Another thing that was present in our lives was that I had a lot of friends who were in basically the same position. That was true to some degree when we were in the Marine Corps, but that quickly became true in Beloit. And the other thing that was the right route for me was I immediately got active in things outside of my house. And that enabled me to have the kind of stimulation that I needed. I joined the League of Women Voters, and that was one of the most that I still belong to the League of Women Voters. It's part of my identity. And it was where I met a lot of people who were concerned and interested in the same things. The church we belonged to in Beloit was a big factor, and we had a lot of, I became involved in a lot of activity out of that. And then there were other kinds of things like that that enabled me to build a kind of stimulation that I badly needed.
As your children grew, you probably started to see personalities coming out of these little kids. How did you nurture their interests and who they were?
Well, I suppose almost any parent would say a child very early on is his own person, and in our case, they are hims. And each one of our sons are very close together in age. They're all come from the same parents, but they're very individual people. And that was wonderful from the start. And so that I don't know what we did to nurture them. We appreciated the fact that they were different people, and they have been, they've all just given us a wonderful ride. Some not without tension, but that's part of the wonder.
And I don't think we ever tried to make them something that they weren't. We accepted who they were, and we tried very hard to reinforce that.
They are wonderful men, our sons. We're very proud that we're their parents.
When a child goes from being a child to an adult, to a man, is that something that happens so gradually you don't think about it, or do you suddenly look and go, oh my gosh, he's a man?
I think it is something that to some degree evolves. But I remember that when they were away at the university and then later, that it seemed to me they were always adults, and we had much more of an adult relationship as soon as they left the house.
I think that's accurate. There was a definite line between the time that they were part of our household and then when they left to go to college. And we considered them adults at that point, although I do remember with some embarrassment that when they came home, I cared about what time they came in. So I wasn't entirely consistent about that. I didn't worry about them when they were not in the household, but as soon as they were back in, then I started worrying about what time they came home. But for the most part, we really did consider them adults at that point, and they were worthy of that, without a doubt.
Did you go through that experience of the empty nest as they left, or were you ready for that?
I don't think we experienced the empty nest syndrome. We were ready, and very definitely they were ready.
There are two comments I would make to that. One is a topic that really hasn't come up too much, which is John was gone a lot in his working life. He traveled a good deal, much of it abroad. And so in some senses, the nest problem was more mine than yours. The other thing is that, especially mention Chris in this, Chris is our youngest. And much to my surprise, and I think to his, when his two brothers were gone, he was not comfortable being the last kid in the house. And he was very anxious to go. And he was ready. So that I knew that was the right thing. So that of course we missed each one of them as they weren't there anymore. And you're overwhelmed by the, oh, can it be time for this? And that still is here. I mean, that happens with every new development. But it was, and he was so happy to have that opportunity. He was ready to be on his own in a different way. and I was happy for him. I missed him. He was the last one, but I missed each one of them. But then you have new opportunities, too.
One thing I remember is that one time Marty called us on the phone. I mean, one of the times he called us. He was talking to Judy, and Judy said...
He was in Madison.
Yeah, he was in Madison. And Judy said, John, he wants to talk to you. And so I got on the phone, and when I finished talking to him, I came back into the room, and I must have had this unbelievable look on my face. And Judy said, what's wrong? And I said, Judy, there's nothing wrong. He called for my advice. I don't remember what the subject was, but that was the event. It reminds me of one comment is that today it is so common to just pick up the phone and call somebody. In fact, if you're on a unlimited calling, it really doesn't cost you anything to call somebody. But during our years raising a family, telephone calls were expensive, very expensive. And two things about that. One is that I spent a lot of time overseas, usually 2 weeks or sometimes 3 weeks at a time. And we were only allowed 1 3-minute phone call each week. And that would never happen now. You'd be in much closer communication. When Judy had some serious kidney surgery, when our boys were quite young, they went to live with my parents for about a month. Even then, we didn't call every day to talk to each of the children. We called about once a week. And Chris had fallen off a slide and fractured his skull.
And broke his arm
when my parents were taking care of him. And today, I think, I don't understand why I didn't just jump in the car and go up there to Rhineland or to be with them. But that wasn't the way. Taking a trip that long was something one didn't do. And I had, of course, the work I had to do. But it's so much different now in terms of communications and the cost of communications. And I one of my deepest regrets was not appreciating what my parents went through in that time with him being fairly seriously injured.
Yes, I feel the same way. And God bless your mother. That must have been a really tough time.
Did you have any times in your marriage that were strained between the two of you, or were you always in sync?
Well, always in sync. I don't think we've had any major times. Obviously, we are, I hope, like everybody else, we annoy each other periodically, and sometimes we're thoughtless of each other, probably because we take each other for granted. But that's one of the wonderful things about having a good marriage for 50 years. You can take a lot for granted a lot of the time. And each of us has periods of our time because of other things in our life that bring stress, certainly in your working life and some of my institutional life, or things with our parents. As our parents have become ill and then we lost them, those were, of course, times that you just rely that your relationship is there. But no, we are, well, at least to my knowledge, John, do we?
Well, even though I was gone a lot, that was fairly well accepted and allowed by Judy. I think a lot of people wouldn't have been able to do the work I did if they had a wife who wasn't supportive of what I was doing. So I think we both have been very careful to support each other in what we do.
We like to be together. We have a lot of fun.
How long have you been retired, John?
I've been retired 10 years and 9 months. No, 10 years and 11 months.
What has that been like for you?
Well, it's very interesting. I really enjoyed my working years. I had great opportunities. I had challenging work. But from the day I retired, I haven't looked back one little bit. And I just simply can't get the smile off my face. I do a lot of things with the workshop that I built. That keeps me happy. I volunteer at a local grade school in fifth grade math. And I really enjoy that. It's with kids who are most of them in a poverty environment. So they need the grandfather figure. And I also am very fortunate to be able to piggyback on what Judy does. And I'm able to secondhand enjoy that, plus the opportunities to be in contact with the people she's associating with.
And what are you doing in your life right now, Judy?
A lot of it right now is focused on the university system. As I mentioned before, I'm a member of the Board of Regents, and there are lots of meetings associated with that, many of them in Madison, but also around the state. I love it all. It's very challenging concerns in this time, but I really care a lot about the quality of education and about the future of our state and about accessibility to all young people and older people as well, and how to make that a reality. I'm still involved in other organizational life in the community, and that's a real benefit to me. We also have many friends in Green Bay, and so we are very fortunate to be with other people a lot, and that's good.
How would you sum up your life to this point, the two of you together?
I would say that I think I can speak for both of us that our marriage is the best thing that's happened to us. And I think we both have had experiences and opportunities that we've enjoyed because each of us has had those opportunities. So together, we've enjoyed each other's experiences and contributions.
Well, how could I say it any better than that? And if indeed, I think that's all true. And part of the reason that it's the best thing that ever happened to us is also our three fine sons. They are extraordinary people. And they each are very, not only are we proud of them and who they are in their lives, but they are also very solicitous of us, and this is probably an indication of that. And we are grateful. They're married to wonderful, wonderful women, and we have five wonderful grandchildren as well. And all of that is part of the gratitude for this marriage.
This is the end of this oral history CD.